Following talk entitled Happy St. Valentine's Day was presented on the 11th of February 2024 by Reverend Julian Harvey.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do not shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometimes too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his golden complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou oust. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee. That was Sonnet 18 from William Shakespeare, 1609. So I thought it was a lovely, I know the, you know, I know the opening line, shall I compare thee to a summer day? I know that one very well. I've never actually read the entire sonnet. So as we, you know, we move into this time of year, it's, you know, it's quite common that people get all sort of excited about Valentine's Day. It's, you know, we've had the rush of Christmas and we've had the flow of the new year coming in from a traditional Western perspective. But then the next big thing, of course, is Valentine's Day. And before anybody asks, the answer is no. It's a leap year, and I will say no to any woman that proposes to me. I'm sorry, ladies. I'm off the market. I know it's a leap year, but just calm down, little Lottia. So what I thought I would do this morning is, and I don't know how, you know, we talk about Valentine's and the reality of it is that not a lot of people actually know what Valentine's Day is all about. When I was at work on Friday, and I thought I'll just find out what people know about Valentine's Day and what their thoughts are. And, you know, it was very commercial in that it was about chocolates and flowers and, you know, going out on hot dates and, you know, those sorts of things. But nobody actually knew at work what Valentine's and where it started from. And I'm not sure how many of you folks know where Valentine's Day came from and what it was about. But as far back as the 8th century, there was recorded a celebration of the Feast of St. Valentine, which was always held on February 14th. The day became associated with romantic love in the 14th and 15th centuries, when the notion of courtly love flourished, apparently by association with the lovebirds of every spring. So in spring in England, because it was predominantly in England and Europe, that's when the lovebirds would nest, and that's when they would lay their eggs, and that's when they would get into that aspect. And lovebirds, I don't know whether you've ever seen them, but they spend a lot of time cuddling. That's what they do. As opposed to other birds where either the male or the female sits on the nest while the other one goes off and finds food. When they come back, they feed the animals and then they keep going. Lovebirds tend to stick together. In the 18th century in England, it grew into an occasion for couples to express their love for each other by presenting flowers, offering confectionery, and sending greeting cards known as Valentines. So the Valentine Day symbols that are used today includes that heart-shaped outline that we know, doves, and the figure of the winged Cupid. Because obviously the focus there with Cupid was that Cupid was the angel of love, and the arrow used to go through the heart and yada, yada, yada. But also there was a sublime attitude to it is that love would then lead to producing children, Cupids of their own. Obviously, in the 19th century, that's when commercialism came into play and there was mass-produced cards. And we know, everybody knows the story of Hallmark, made all their money initially from Valentine's cards and then branched out into other cards. And then Hallmark became a large organisation that now looks after all sorts of things, including they actually produce movies, you know, those soppy movies that we watch sometimes on television. Is produced by Hallmark. So they're a large organisation, but it was basically predominantly in the 19th century that all that commercialism of Valentine's happened. In Italy, and it's happening also now in Paris. So in Paris, I don't know whether you know this or not, but there's a bridge that goes over the River Seine in Paris, and lovers leave locks, padlocks, on the fence of the, and it's covered in it. And it's supposed to be a symbolism of their undying love for each other that is locked forever in the city. What Paris is always known as the city of love for a whole bunch of reasons, but that one of them is this tradition. However, in Italy, St. Valentine's keys are given to lovers as a romantic symbol and an invitation to unlock the giver's heart. So we hand over keys. Now, Noel did that years ago with Margaret, and she's still holding them tightly in her hand. It's also given, believe it or not, to children to ward off epilepsy. So it's, yes, I love you, and our kids are not going to have epilepsy. I don't know what that's about. But anyway, that's the story there. What's really interesting is none of the countries that celebrate Valentine's Day, none of those places actually have a public holiday for Valentine's Day. There is no public holiday anywhere in the world for St. Valentine's Day. Although in traditional Anglican communion and also in the Lutheran Church, there is an actual feast that they have for St. Valentine's Day. So on the 14th, they have a feast and it's a part of their communion process. Also, many parts of the Eastern Orthodox Church also celebrate St. Valentine's Day in honor, and it's usually on July 6th. So the Eastern Orthodox churches actually celebrate Valentine's Day on the 6th of July in honor of the Roman presbyter, St. Valentine, and on July 30 in honor of Hieromata Valentine, who was the bishop of Interama. Now, Interama was the traditional name for a city in Italy called Terni, and Terni still exists, and they still have, on the 30th, they still celebrate that Valentine, because the reality of it is there's three St. Valentines. So there are a few of them around. So the reason that we celebrate St. Valentine is that there's actually three martyrs who are called St. Valentines and celebrated as St. Valentine. And they all are connected in some form or fashion to February 14th, including an account of an imprisonment of St. Valentine of Rome, who ministered to Christians persecuted under the Roman Empire in the 3rd century. So he was a Christian, and he was he would go around and he would minister to those Christians that were around. But according to tradition, or according to discussions or writings that are around at the time and early tradition, it is proposed, or it is recognized, that Saint Valentine actually restored the sight to the blind daughter of the jailer. So it's another miracle that we don't talk about, or another miracle it's out there, which is interesting. Then the other part of the Roman Saint Valentine is that it is rumored, and one of the reasons that he was then martyred and killed off by the Romans is that he used to conduct Christian weddings. So he would perform weddings for Christians, and that was illegal under Roman law. So he got, and they were forbidden, to marry, obviously. And so there's also an embellished letter, supposed letter that was written at the time to the daughter of that jailer, where it is signed at the end as your Valentine, as a farewell to her before his execution. So there's evidence or supposed evidence that they think has been kind of embellished, though. So they're not saying it's 100% true, but he did write to the jailer's daughter before his execution. So, as I said, there's St. Valentine of Rome. Then there's also, and he was martyred in 269 and was buried on the Via Flaminia, which is an area in Rome. But then there's a Valentine of Terni who became Bishop of Interimana, which is now Terni, which is in central Italy. And he's said to have been martyred during the persecution under Emperor Aurelian in 273. And he's also buried, but in a separate grave. So there's now in that place, there are two Saint Valentines buried in the same place. And then the Catholic Encyclopedia speaks of a third saint named Valentine who was mentioned in early martyrologies. So they have these martyrologies. But really, he was martyred in Africa, but there's very little actually written about him. It just literally says he was martyred in Africa. See you later. And that was about it. What we have to remember is that St. Valentine's Day is not just about love and flowers and those sorts of things. It's a day to remember the spiritual side of love as well. And that's the aspect of it that we need to focus on, the spiritual side. As the song said, the world needs more love. We need to focus on the spiritual love. The word Valentine comes from the Latin word valens, which means worthy, strong, or powerful. In the Bible, the word Valentine is used about God's love for us. So in Psalm 136, verse 2, it says, "Oh, give thanks to the God of gods, for his steadfast love endures forever." In John 4, verse 8, he says, "Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love." Now, that's from the New Revised Standard Version, those two quotes. There's been some interesting poems written about love. The first one I read was from the Sonnet of William Shakespeare. But one of my favorite, well, a poet that I got to know about when I was doing my studies in education was Edgar Allan Poe. I'd never really knew much about Edgar Allan Poe. But he wrote two poems. That really made a mark on me, one of which was, and the reason it made the mark on me is it was an episode of The Simpsons. They did a version of his poem, The Crow, which is about a crow that that watches what's going on. And it's actually the poem is called The Telltale Heart. Now, it's a very grim poem, so I'm not going to read that one, so you can all relax. But Edgar Allan Poe was madly in love with a woman at the time, and he wrote a poem in 1850 called A Valentine. "For her this rhyme is penned, whose luminous eyes, brightly expressive as the twins of Leda, shall find her own sweet name, that nestling lies, upon the page enwrapped from every reader. Search narrowly the lines, they hold a treasure divine, a talisman, an amulet that must be worn at heart. Search well the measure, the words, the syllables. Do not forget the trivialest point, or you may lose your labor. And yet there is in this no Gordian knot, which one might not undo without a sabre, if one could merely comprehend the plot. In written upon the leaf where now appeared, I scintillating soul, there lies a perjure. Three elegant words oft uttered in the hearing of poets by poets as the name of a poet's too. His letters, although naturally lying, like the knight Pinto Mendez Fernando, still form a synonym for truth. Cease trying. You will not read the riddle, though you do not, you do the best you can do. Now, it's a really complicated poem. I don't know whether you understood any of it or took it all in. But the trick with this poem, which was really lovely, is that you start with the first line of the poem and you take the first letter of the first word. Second line, first letter of the second word, and so on and so forth through the poem, and you end up with the name of the girl that he's in love with. And it's a well-known poem for having a hidden message behind it. And it was a woman that he was in love with whose last name was Olga. And if you read the actual, and you put the line, if you put the line in order, following the message that he says that you have to do, then you actually end up with a diagonal with her name written in it, which is kind of interesting. I thought it was kind of cool. Clever poet, Edgar Allan Poe. Ah, well, she knew it was for her, didn't she? I mean, you know, hopefully she knew it was for her. So the other aspect of today is, or this time of year, is that this is known as the Lunar New Year, and it's the beginning of a new year based on the lunar calendar or the lunisolar calendar. They're two separate calendars. The lunar calendar follows the lunar phase, while the lunisolar calendar follows both the lunar phase and the time of the solar year. So it takes both into account. The event is then celebrated by numerous cultures in various ways at diverse dates. So the dates change. The more well-known celebrations, including New Year's Day or week in the Chinese calendar and the Tibetan calendar of East Asia, and the Buddhist and Hindu calendars of Southeast and South Asia. So all of those groups kind of celebrate that Chinese New, quote-unquote Chinese New Year at the same time. The Islamic calendar and the Jewish calendar that originated in the Middle East and the Nisga'a calendar from Canada, they determine the first of the month of a new lunar year varies by their culture. So the culture changes what's going on. So the lunar calendar only looks at the phases of the moon and it doesn't look at the time of year. The lunisolar calendar is the calendar that combines the lunar calendars and the solar calendars. And therefore, they indicate both the moon phase and the time of the solar year, that is, the position of the sun in the Earth's sky. So that's too complicated to go through. So obviously, as with all calendars, both calendars are divided in the year into months, which there is an additional requirement that each year have a whole number of months. In some cases, the ordinary years consist of 12 months, but every second or third year, an embolismic year, which adds a 13th interclary or embolistic leap month. So when's our leap month? February, thank you. So remember, ladies, no is the answer. The Gregorian calendar, which is the world's most common one, that's the one we all live by at the moment in the majority of the world, is a solar one, but the Western Christian churches use a lunar-based algorithm to determine the date of Easter and the consequent movable feasts. So there are a variety of movable feasts that happen. So the Chinese New Year is a festival that celebrates the beginning of a new year on the traditional lunisolar Chinese calendar, okay? And then the festival is referred to as a spring festival because it's beginning, because we're talking Northern Hemisphere predominantly. It's about they're going into spring as we're coming out of summer and going into our winter. And the first day of the Chinese New Year begins on the new moon that appears between the 21st of January and the 20th of February. So sometime in that month, the new moon appears. That's when Chinese New Year is. And that Chinese New Year is also the spring festival that happens in other traditions. So as you probably would have seen being advertised everywhere, that this is the year of the dragon. And I don't know what your understandings are of the dragon, but this year is a year of a wood dragon. So there are different dragons. And those dragons all have different symbolism and they have different meanings. And what's really interesting, or what was really interesting about it, is understanding there's all this metaphysics under the calendar and under the animals and the representations that happen within those, within that Chinese calendar. So the current dragon, or the dragon that we're going into, is the wood dragon, which is commonly known as Luang, and it's the fifth of the 12-year cycle of animals which appear in the Chinese zodiac related to the Chinese calendar. The year of the dragon is also associated with what's known as the earthly branch. So they have earth, and they have fire, and they have wind, and they have water. So they have the four elements in the Chinese tradition of metaphysics. The year, yeah, so it's the earthly one. During the cultural, which is really interesting, during the cultural revolution, there was an attempt to replace the symbol with the giant panda. So we're going to have the year of the panda. However, the movement was short-lived and didn't last long, which is a good thing, because I don't know whether you know about pandas, but more pandas die from killing themselves from accidents than die from any other in the wild than any other animal. They're actually quite they're not very intelligent. Let's say that. They fall out of trees and kill themselves. Hey, you're a monkey? Excellent. Do you know what your Chinese year is? I wouldn't have a clue. I think I'm the ox. So what's really interesting about the wood dragon is that traditionally in Chinese philosophy, wood, sometimes translated as tree, is the growing of the matter, or the matter's growing stage, which I found really interesting, because this means that during this year, we have the option, we have the ability to grow further, to grow a better understanding. So it's a growing year. For the Chinese, it's a growing year, a year of growing in understanding and a growing in knowledge and a growing through that. Wood is the first phase of what's known as the Wu Xing when observed or discussed, and it's about movement, it's about growth. As you know, with Chinese tradition, they have what's known as the yin and the yang, and wood is the lesser yang character of the five elements, giving birth to fire. So without wood, we wouldn't have fire. Without the growth of wood and without the wood being there, we wouldn't have the fire, and fire changes energy. It's about changing process and moving forward in that regard. It stands for springtime. It also stands for things like the East. It also is representative or connected with the planet Jupiter, the color green, windy weather because of trees. And it can be represented by what's known as the azure dragon in the four symbols. And its colors are predominantly, even though it's called the wood dragon and it is wooden, in shape, but it can have blue and cyan colors, which also represent that timber. Another really interesting fact about the wood dragon that I really liked was that in Chinese medicine, wood is associated with negative feelings of anger, hopelessness, but it also has the opposite. It has the positive feelings of optimism, courage, patience, and the virtue of benevolence. So it shows you the two sides. So Again, Lynette and I were having a really good conversation yesterday in yesterday's class about, oh no, it was Ruth, the week before. Ruth Triggs and I had a wonderful conversation about anger and how anger, in some respects, in the situations. So she was recounting a situation where she was angry because of some behaviors and some things that happened to a friend of hers. And what I said to her, I said, that's amazing, because I said, you're feeling anger. Which is what you're actually expressing is divine love. And she looked at me like I was strange. She's going, no, I'm really angry. I said, yeah. It's your love and compassion for your friend and the circumstances that you are expressing that love using the emotion of anger. So you need to understand where that is coming from and look at the fact that you have these opposites. You can have anger that is based on divine love. However, as we say a lot in uni, it's great to feel things, but we have the choice as to whether or not we react from those. And that's where the choice factor comes in. So Wood is always, has the negative of feelings of anger, hopelessness, and then the positive feelings of optimism, courage, patience, and virtue. And when you think about the metaphysics of it, it makes sense. Wood then gets burnt in anger through fire. And creates a new energy that goes out into the universe, which then feeds the soil, feeds the air, and so on and so forth. So it made sense to me. So this time of year or this particular, the next couple of weeks is an interesting time, both for multiculturals and understanding that from a cultural perspective, we all have different views about love. We have different views about spirituality. But the reality of it is there's a lot of it that's connected, a lot of it that's similar, a lot of it's the same. So that means that we can go into different communities or different situations and we can recognize and love the differences. We can love the changes that are happening when we see what's going on that with our understanding about who we are. And how we're in the world, and how we see the world, how we feel the world. It's also another way for us to look at what's going on in and around both our personal lives and also our, the world around us, our communities, seeing that change is constant, and that sometimes that change requires the burning of wood and the fire that comes from that change. Sometimes we need to evolve that energy into something else. So when we're talking about personal issues and personal stuff, it's about evolving our internal wood into understanding where that change is happening and how that change is occurring and what needs to happen, what we need to do with that, and how we need to process that. So understanding that Valentine's Day is a day where we get to experience love, and we get to see that the world understands that love is something that's around us and through us and in the world. But we also need to recognize, where do we need to be our Valentine to ourselves? Where do we need to say, you know what? You are my best friend. You are something I care about. You are my Valentine. And knowing that that's within us, and knowing that we can celebrate that as part of that process. So what I want you to do now is just go into a quiet meditation. I want you to get yourselves into a comfortable position. And I want you to feel your heartbeat. However you want to do that, whether you want to put your hand on your heart, whether you want to feel a pulse, or whether you can feel the heart within you. Feel that rhythm of the heart. Feel that connection to our divine power of love, knowing that within us we have the divine gift, that is at the core of who we are, divine love. And as you meditate, think about all those things that you love about yourself. Think about the divine love, the miracle of who you are as a person individually. Think about the gift that you bring to the world. No matter how big, how small, think about the joy that you have in any given situation. And then I want you to think about the love you have for those around you, family, friends, colleagues, co-workers. Knowing that they are exactly the same as you, looking for answers, searching. Navigating through this world that we live in. And if there's someone in your world that is not so conducive to you, think of them now and send them love. Send them divine love. And then think about our planet. Think about the abundance and the sheer love that is shared with us every day by being on this planet. The sun, clouds, the rain, the trees, the birds. Think about sending divine love out into the planet, connecting with that Mother Earth, sending it love, and think about this amazing universe, this phenomenal universe we live in, full of stars and meteors and rockets and moons and planets and other galaxies. Think about the phenomenal beauty that's out there. knowing that that phenomenal beauty and that amazing space that's out there is also within you. And knowing that all you need to do is to be the love you are. So it is. Be the love you are.